Well, good evening.
Good evening.
We've lost all of our gentlemen for the evening. Just us girls, as they say. So we've come to a very interesting part of this. Instructions for the Zen cook, where Dogen brings up an old koan, a very strange sounding koan, and Uchiyama Roshi has a whole chapter in this book, chapter 10, that talks about the koan. So I thought we could look at what Dogen says, just a little bit of the get of the instructions for the Zen cook, and then go and listen to Uchiyama Roshi a little bit, who explains about the cow, how this cow can be. He says, keep your eyes open. Don't allow even one grain of rice to be lost. See the pot as your own head. See the water as your lifeblood. Then he goes into how to divvy it up. If you have so many people in the community and so much rice, so many grains of rice, how do you do this? And those of us who have cooked for a large group know that this is not easy. And so he says, first you have to figure out who you've got there. And so the cook should go into the zendo and check and count everybody there. And if you go to Sesshin, you will see that either the cook or the fukuten, the undercook, come into the zendo and count before lunch to make sure they have the right number so that they can chop up so many vegetables and have enough so that there's a little bit more than you think you need, but not too much. It's always very tricky, and it's not a happy situation when you run out of food before everybody has been fed. That's a very, very unhappy situation. The psychology of eating is so close to the bone, and that sense of want and need is very deep in us. And the anxiety of not having enough. So orioki, which is what is called our meal is called, means just enough. And so theoretically you just take one scoop of whatever is there and that's enough to get you through till the next meal. It's not the American style. We don't so much do that. But it's something to keep in mind, even in our own lives. In America, we eat such massive amount of food, way more than we need. And we're offered more than we need, as I said last week. So he said, when you know the exact number of the community, then calculate the amount of food to be cooked. For every grain of rice to be eaten, supply one grain. In dividing one grain, the result may be 2 half grains or possibly 3 or 4. On the other hand, one grain might equal 1/2 grain or perhaps 2 half grains. Then again, 2 half grains might be counted as 1 whole grain. you must be able to clearly see how much of a surplus will be created if you add one unit of rice, or whether there will be enough if you take away one unit. It makes a difference whether you have very hungry people. At the beginning of a retreat, everybody's ravenous and eats a lot. And by the end of retreat, people aren't so hungry anymore. They've found a balance. There are some people who have a very large appetite and can eat until the cows come home. And other people hardly eat a thing. And so if you're cooking in a monastery, you begin to know who those people are, and you adjust the quantities according to who's there, person by person by person. Oh, Charlie eats a lot, so we'll make a whole lot of extra for Charlie. And Susie hardly eats a little thing. He says, when you eat a grain of luling rice, and this will explain luling in a moment, you may become the monk Guishan. When you add a grain, you may become the cow. Sometimes the cow eats Guishan. Sometimes Guishan pastures the cow. Consider whether you have thoroughly understood these matters and are able to make these calculations. Go back over everything again, and when you've understood these details, be prepared to explain them to others according to their capacity to understand. Use ingenuity in your practice. See the cow and Guishan as one, not two, even though they temporarily appear that way. In your day-to-day life, do not forget this, even for a moment. First thing to look at are these words, luling rice, Guishan, and cow. There's an old story about luling rice that goes like this. A monk asked Queen Yuan Xingzhi, what is the essence of the Buddha Dharma? Master Queen Yuan replied, what is the current price of rice in Luling? End of story. So if you ask a question about the Buddha Dharma and get an answer about the price of rice in Luling, what does that mean? Uchiyama Roshi says, the Buddha Dharma is often expressed by the words shogyo mujo, all things are impermanent. There is nothing we can point to as being fixed. On the other hand, if we become attached to the idea that everything is impermanent and nothing is fixed, then we have fallen into the trap of trying to fix something. Living out the Dharma means to carry on our everyday activities, seeing relatively fixed things where originally or fundamentally they are not so. So it's like seeing the table and knowing that one of these days it's going to be a pile of wood. Or seeing your grandpa and knowing someday you're going to go to his funeral. That everything that we see is temporary in that way. Every single thing, including we ourselves. Living up the Dharma. Let's see. At this juncture, it is important not to take it for granted that it is impossible to express the Buddha Dharma through language. It is essential that we express ourselves clearly and accurately whenever possible. although there is really no way for me to resolve these old koans and stories by explaining them, I do so for the sake of clarification and only as a tentative explanation. The following story about Guishan and the cow has been passed down through the years. One day, Guishan said to the monks, 100 years after my death, I will be reborn as a cow belonging to a parishioner near the skirt of this mountain. On the right flank of the cow will be written, I am Guishan. Now, if you say the cow is me, you will be wrong, because it's just a cow. And if you say it is just a cow, you are wrong, because it will be me. So, what should you say? This story, Uchiyama Roshi says, by itself is a very intriguing one. However, if I had to break it down, this is the way I would go about it. Generally, we assume that what we call ourself is some sort of fixed entity. Actually, though, there is no such fixed entity. Our metabolism is constantly changing and our consciousness is always flowing. What then would it be that we could call ourself? There's no concrete entity like the stone inside a plum, which we can call I. And yet, though we say that nothing is fixed, it is not a matter of ourself being non-existent. As in the story of the Luling rice, our self occurs at the juncture of what is relatively fixed and what cannot be fixed. The practice of the Buddha Dharma is the attempt to express life at that juncture, where that which is fixed intermingles with that which is indeterminate or undefined. For this reason, it is difficult to understand. Through these stories in the Tenzo Kyokun, Dogen Zenji tries to express a most subtle point about the expression and function of life. In other words, when you eat a grain of luling rice, you may become the monk Guishan. In a certain sense, we live by eating rice or whatever contains a certain amount of nutrition and which has a certain market price. At the same time, as we use our bodies to practice the Buddha's way of life, we give expression to the immeasurableness of the Buddha. But now, just eating rice does not guarantee that we are manifesting the infinity of the Buddha. For if we do not practice the way, our bodies are just lumps of flesh. Or we could look at it in the way the text puts it, when you add a grain, you may become a cow. What then is this body? Truly, it is neither an entity that is fixed, nor is it something undefined. If you eat food in order to do zazen, that food is for zazen. If you eat food in order to steal, it is just food for sustaining a thief. If you eat in order to go and sleep with a prostitute, it becomes rice for that purpose. To the extent that you do zazen with your body, the cow eats guishan. You're mistaken, though, if you think it's best to throw away your body, in this case the cow, because you think it has no value, and just practice zazen. In other words, be guishan. Our zazen becomes the Buddha Dharma, precisely when it is functioning as this body in our daily life. There will always be that complaining and unsatisfied aspect of the self with which we have to deal. The Dharma is not going to become manifest only after we have somehow brought this aspect under control or stamped it out. The function of the Dharma and of Zazen is to care for the obstreperous aspect of ourselves in the same way a mother lulls her baby to sleep. In other words, Guishan pastures the cow. He said, I cannot help feeling that there is deep significance in the word pasture. So as Dogen says, always keep in mind it's an interface. And we ourselves, our body life, is the interface of Buddha life. And we get to choose who eats the rice. The thief eats the rice. Up to a point, we get to choose. Up to a point, we are stuck with who we are and make the best of it. In fact, can even enjoy every bite. It's not a long time that we have, and not much to work with, and a big world to be. So maybe there are questions at this point. I kind of stopped there because I thought reading Uchiyama Roshi would be helpful. Or totally confusing. Your questions?
They read this at the Tassajara kitchen. They read Dogen's instructions to the cook this over and over again.
I've heard that, yeah.
And so if you're in there, you get a little piece of it. And we actually read that piece. And they talked about Thich Nhat Hanh's interdependence.
Mm-hmm.
When you see the grain of rice, you see the farmer and the water and the whatever.
Yes.
So there's that interpretation as well. I guess it wasn't a question, it was more a comment.
Well, that is Dogen's point, but it's even bigger than that because it's not just the stuff of it. But there's another aspect of it that isn't stuff, that isn't a cow, that there's a practice side of it, a Zazen side, you could say. The Buddha side, or the sort of eternal way. And that's what's being tried to express. The monk in his Zazen practice is expressing something more than just being a lump of flesh. But he's saying that anything out of the eternal can be reborn in any lump of flesh. And it might be a cow, or it might be a bug. That it isn't about rebirth so much as just that there's this continual ongoing flow of stuff and not stuff that comes into being and goes off out again and then comes in another way. So it's constantly being reprocessed, you could say. And sometimes it's processed as a Zen monk or as you, and sometimes as a cow or a spider. And so in a way, whatever we see is one of us. Is part of that, part of the process of which we are a part to, from which we came and to which we return. Which is why Emily Dickinson asked to have on her tombstone, "Gone back." Which I always like. And in a way, you can say our Zazen practice is a kind of going back. What Dogen calls a backward step. When we drop our attachment to the stuff of us and simply allow the whole to work as it will in complete acceptance. And in a way, in surrender. And that's why it's suggested that we practice also as preparation for dying, which isn't maybe what we imagine so much as simply part of the transition from this to 100 years from now, a cow with our name written on the side of it. Who knows? Who knows? What marvelous forms. Samia?
In this practice, Angie, have you gotten to a point where you're reading, you know, Dogen or somebody else? And I mean, you've studied this for a long time, and do you say, you know, this doesn't make sense? You know, okay, we went to the Zendo, counted how many people, and, you know, Jerry decided not to eat today, and Wendy decided not to eat, so here we have all these leftovers,
yeah.
And what am I going to do? You know, I can't throw them away and, you know, eat them again. And or, you know, didn't cook enough, so the bowl is going down. Isn't it common sense for us that are sitting and eating, okay, the second bowl doesn't have enough tofu, so I'm not going to take three helpings. So it goes down the line. So, you know, sometimes I feel there's so much stress on, I mean, I'm asking two questions here at the same time. So yes, there is the practice of really paying attention, which is lovely, but there's to a point where it's like, you know what, I can't, this is almost too much. But is there something that's too much fussing to where you're losing the
peace and quiet of it?
Right.
Well, of course it's a practice. So the eating practice is a real training in a lot of ways, and stress is a part of it. Mm-hmm. Learning, just learning the forms is so tricky. How to do the tie, mm-hmm. when to, where to, what direction to put the spoon. Mm-hmm. Everything is so particular, mm-hmm. that it in the beginning it's terrifying for some people. Jennifer is nodding her head. I was terrified just trying to figure out what you're supposed to do. And of course that's built into it, because that's part of our self-consciousness that isn't really necessary. nobody cares if we make a mistake. It doesn't really matter if we don't know perfectly how to do it the first time. And we think we need to.
Or the third time.
Or the tenth time. We think we need to, and we don't. So it's learning that truth, that we're not so important, and our mistakes don't matter that much. So there's that part. The part about serving is that people should know better, and sometimes they don't, about the second serving. And the we should all know that if there's very little in the second serving, just enough for everybody to have a bit, to take just a bit. And often people don't remember that and just say, oh, I'm hungry, take a lot. So that's education. We need to just make sure people understand that. And Uchiyama Roshi talks about leftovers and says that sometimes you end up with too much food, and then you have to find something to do with it and be prepared to have seconds. A whole another use of it. Save it for dinner and make dinner a mush like we used to, and just put everything that's left over in one serving. So there's always a way.
Yes, and I mean it's a wonderful practice, the leftovers and all of that.
Yeah.
Also, the other part of the question is, again, I'm asking it, did you come to a point of something, which I don't know what it is, where you said, you know, this doesn't make sense, and like, not I'm not going to do it, but, you know, not everything that Dogen says would apply to everybody, right?
Or oh,
no,
right.
Or no, if you really, since this practice is more about the more you practice, the more you get it, so just keep doing it, at some point you'll get it.
There isn't anything to get in that sense. All of these forms, all of these stories are all just pointing back to us and our life and our practice. So what's to get is in you. It's not in this.
So we have to customize it for us.
Absolutely.
So if the question comes that this doesn't make sense, it's okay. I mean, not in a, like, I know better, but, you know, this is just not working for me.
Oh, if you read, there's a fat book of Soto koans called The Book of Serenity. That will make you so unserene to read. It's very disturbing. They're just all these stories like Bhishan and the cow. And you can read those and read those. And occasionally a light will go on and you'll think, oh, I think I understand what they're trying to say. But often it's very mysterious. They're old stories. And they all have zazen as the foundation, the experience of sitting. And so it's to help us. And sometimes bewilderment is helpful. It's even helpful to throw up our hands and give up. And sometimes it helps to really get interested and knuckle down and see what's in there. So it's all just material to give us encouragement and sustain us in some way as we do the basic practice, which is simply surrendering to Zazen itself, which means our life. Good question. actually, it's just about 8 o'clock. That's a good time to stop. Thank you all. We'll continue. Are there announcements?
Well, we're having our business meeting next Tuesday night at 8:10 or whenever we finish setting, restoring the meeting hall here. And let me know if there's something you'd like to add to the agenda. We need someone to open next Tuesday. We could email Jeffrey and see if he's willing to do it. Okay, thank you.
I'll stop looking at my thing.
So business meeting is next week?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. It looks short. A short agenda. Maybe.
Well, yeah, it won't be over an hour. We'll keep it to an hour or under.
Yeah. Okay, 1 minute sit.